Sean Tilly. My Radio 1.
From its launch in 1967, right through the 70s to the mid-80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'm introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years, as they each tell the story of their Radio 1.
My Radio 1. Sean Tilly. With Sean Tilly.
And it wasn't just about playing the biggest hit songs of the day.
Radio 1, here's me.
To tell us more, here's Ian Parkinson.
Thanks, Sean. On this edition of My Radio 1, I'll tell you how I nearly came a cropper after tripping over a famous DJ. There was the time I relaxed with Frankie long before Mike Reed chose not to play their single. And I'll talk about the TV movie I featured in that gave viewers nightmares for months afterwards.
Newsbeat.
Oh, there you are, you see. You've still got it. Ian, how lovely to see you. Your first experience of broadcasting in terms of a newsroom was at a radio station that we have in common, Radio Luxembourg, in the London studios, 38 Hertford Street.
Yes, that's right. I'd left college early because I applied for a job there. And it was, I don't know if you remember, many of your listeners may remember, it used to be Radio Luxembourg News from the newsroom of the Daily Mirror.
Yes.
They set up their own newsroom because the deal with the Mirror came to an end, and I was that newsroom. It literally was just me, and we had a telex machine, and I would write the news once an hour throughout the evening and telex it to the studios in Luxembourg. Yeah. In the Grand Duchy, and someone had to put on a long record and run from one end of the building to the other to get it off the telex and go back and read
you
it.
You see, in my days at Radio Luxembourg, they put the telex machine in the studio. So, I mean, thank goodness for that 208 fading in and out, because you wouldn't hear the noise of the telex machine in the background. But that was the thing, wasn't it? Because you were putting all the news together, but the DJs were actually reading it out on air.
Yeah, I mean, it was a strange setup, and I didn't stay there for very long, because I went off to Radio 210 in Reading and started working in the newsroom there when Steve Wright was still broadcasting. I think Mike Reed had left to join Radio Luxembourg shortly before that. But that was the first
Steve
time.
Steve was heading that way as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was very soon after I left Radio 210. But he was. That was the first time that I met Steve Wright.
And that's the news on 1 until 8:30, Steve. Come on then, let's rub noses together.
No, please, not this time in the morning.
Isn't it funny how things turn out? Because you and I don't know if you remember this, used to work on breakfast shows on local radio.
Indeed.
Do you remember?
Yes.
Hey!
Much earlier than this.
Oh, you're telling me, Matt. This is early enough, though.
And then we have another radio station in common, my dear hometown station, Swansea Sound.
Yep.
And, I mean, obviously, we've talked about this ahead of the programme that we're doing right now. You've got some good memories of old Swansea, Abertawie.
Yeah, very much so. So, I guess, you know, the Swansea Sound and the Swansea Sound newsroom was really my first proper staff reporter's job. And the other thing I learned invaluably is how to pronounce difficult names, because, yeah, quite rightly, people took exception to me not pronouncing Welsh names properly. And to this day, I still correct people who...
Llanelli's a good one, isn't
it? Yeah, don't ask me to try that now.
That's the classic, isn't it, when you hear the traffic and travel and what have you.
Swansea Sound, 1170 AM, 95.1 FM, Coast to Coast Radio.
Swansea Sound News at 6, Ian Parkinson.
Was it BBC Radio London after this?
Radio City in Liverpool.
Oh, another station we've got in common.
Yeah, Radio City in Liverpool, again, a brilliant time to be there.
Yeah, in the Stanley Street days.
Yes, in working in Stanley Street, and a brilliant area for both news stories and, of course, sports stories at the time as well. And, again, great training. 24-hour news operation, half-hour news program once a day. It was a real kind of a real eye-opener. Then I came down and freelanced at BBC Radio London, and which would have been, I guess, late 79, early 1980, I think, although my memory's a little bit hazy. But while I was there, we happen to have the siege at the Iranian embassy.
This is Radio London, 206 medium wave and 94.9 VHF.
Luckily, I had a room in a flat kind of just around the corner in on the sort of borders of Earl's Court. So I sort of became the reporter on the spot because the radio car, which was an old Hillman Hunter, was parked around the corner, actually within the cordon around the embassy. And I spent pretty much the whole of the siege there reporting for BBC Radio London, which we won a, I think it's Pi Local Radio Award in those days. We won an award for it. And that sort of brought me a little bit to the attention of, in particular, Newsbeat. And that's kind of one of the things that ended up with me going to Newsbeat.
And was it John Hunt who was the editor then?
Yeah, John Hunt, who was a remarkable BBC journalist and BBC editor, very small, very pugnacious Welshman, who'd actually sort of served in the Second World War. You know, you kind of forget that it was a very different generation at the BBC, even in those days. And he real sort of old school hard-nosed journalist, but a lovely man and very good at developing young talent. Newsbeat as a programme had been running for quite a few years by that stage. But for most of the day at that point, the news bulletins outside the main programmes were done by the Radio 2 newsreader, who would do the news at the top of the hour on Radio 2, then on the half hour on Radio 1. And suddenly, the news on Radio 1 sounded a bit old-fashioned. So Newsbeat and Radio 1 recruited a whole raft of producers and reporters specifically to do those news bulletins. So I think I was one of the first people to join. John Andrew joined at the same time as me. Janet Trewin joined at pretty much exactly the same time as me.
I guess the main presenters of Newsbeat were Peter Main and Frank Partridge.
Yes, and Laurie Mayer.
Yeah,
I think
was still around. Yes, yeah.
Laurie Mayer had probably just left or was still around. But yeah, Peter Main, Frank Partridge, and Richard Skinner as
of
well.
Of course, yeah, who hadn't yet made the complete move over.
No, it was about probably about a year or so later that Richard went across and did, I think, initially the evening show.
Yeah. Yeah. And a single new song, and there's loads more new songs on offer now because it's just gone 5:45 and Richard Skinner's at the round table.
Ian, you stole my line exactly.
Within hardly any time whatsoever, there you were as one of the main Newsbeat presenters, certainly when you get to about 1981, 82. It's crazy in a way, isn't it? Because there you were broadcasting to millions of people every day. You were a household voice. But of course, in complete contrast to the DJs, particularly of that time, who had Top of the Pops and various gigs up and down the country, you could walk down the street and nobody would know who you were.
Yeah, I was always grateful for that, actually.
How did I know you were going to say that?
National Radio 1. News on the network now at 2:31. Here's Ian Parkinson. Radio 1.
The Soviet leader Yuri Andropov was again absent when Communist Party chiefs met in Moscow this morning to plan their economic policies for next year. He missed the first session of the meeting yesterday, arousing fresh speculation about his health. Police in the Midlands are looking for two prisoners on the run from Stafford Jail. They scaled the perimeter wall after tying a number of sheets together. They've been named as Terry Kirk, who's 38, and 19-year-old Keith Lame. That's all for now. There's more news here on Radio 1 at 3:30.
Actually, as a newsreader, reporter, presenter on Newsbeat, you didn't have that much daily contact with the network. You'd bump into the DJs, and especially in the evenings. And it has to be said, you know, I grew to know Annie Nightingale very well later on in my career. But as a sort of 21, 22-year-old lad, going into a darkened studio and Annie was sitting there smoking with a bottle of wine. it was a bit of an intimidating... she was absolutely lovely, but you did feel a little bit intimidated because I'd grown up, you know, listening to Annie and watching her. And one night I came down and the studio, although there was music going out. The studio was in total darkness. I thought, this is very odd. Pushed open the door and walked into the studio and tripped over Paul Gambaccini. Because I think Paul had got a bad back or something, and he put a long album track on and was lying down meditating, stretching out, and I nearly, you know, screamed and swore on.
He probably had a bad back on. Yeah.
You know. Little teaser for tomorrow night when Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark will be special studio guests of ours, and Elvis Costello and the Attractions amongst the guests tonight, and their first one just coming up. But to get myself in the mood for that Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark disc, I turned out all the lights in the studio, and for the first time ever, I'm confronting the console without any light whatsoever, except the lights from the board itself, and it looks like I'm piloting Concord, or at least a two-seater. But the only thing is, without any lights, I can't really tell which of these buttons starts Elvis Costello.
Sunday.
No, it's not that one. No, it's not that one. Elvis, where are you?
Probably the first sort of news headline I read out as a presenter of Newsbeat, where I thought, oh, actually, that's history, was the Falklands War.
And of course.
Because
yeah.
I think I was on duty and doing the evening Newsbeat when the Argentines surrendered. Mm. So the headline was, you know, the Union flag has been raised above Port Stanley or whatever.
Radio 1.
At 10 o'clock, Ian Parkinson reporting. As Britain and Argentina build up their military forces over the Falkland Islands crisis, international concern is quickening. The United States Secretary of State Alexander Haig has seen ambassadors from both countries, and Colombia has called an emergency meeting of the American States Permanent Council to discuss the dispute tomorrow. Britain has asked European countries to support an embargo on all imports from Argentina beginning tonight. West Germany will consider the request tomorrow. She has warships being built for Argentina. Austria tonight stopped a delivery of tanks for Argentina, and the Swiss too have blocked what they describe as a delivery of war materials. All day, British ships have been leaving for the Falklands. In addition to warships, a P&O container vessel is being loaded with tanks. The liner Canberra will be taken over when she berths in Southampton tomorrow. And the RAF has chartered British Airways jumbo jets for moving troops. In Argentina, two military forces are building up. There are reports of queues outside recruiting offices, and it's said that the Argentine Navy is almost entirely at sea.
And at the time, I remember thinking, well, actually, that's more than a news headline. That's actually, you know, a bit of history.
The message we've got is that British troops landed on South Georgia this afternoon, shortly after 4 p.m. London time. They have now successfully taken control of Gritviken. At about 6 p.m. London time, the white flag was hoisted in Gritviken beside the Argentine flag, and shortly afterwards, the Argentine forces there surrendered to British forces.
You weren't just reading the news. There was the showbiz angle to Newsbeat as well, obviously meeting the big pop stars of the day. And again, something that we touched on at the beginning of this programme, you met Frankie Goes to Hollywood long before Mike Reed was, fussed with the certain controversy that a record may have, well, it did, didn't it, bring about on his programme, and obviously those repercussions went as far as Top of the Pops as well. Although I think, Frankie, it was the best thing that ever happened to them. What are your memories of meeting them in the early days?
Well, that was all part of, you know, one of the things about being a reporter on Newsbeat is that you had an interview with a pop musician at the end of the programme at 12:30 and at 5:30. They were clearly going to go places because they were great characters. And yes, I interviewed them, and we played Relax, and Relax was on the Radio 1 playlist and getting played for quite a while before Mike Reed actually listened to it in the morning.
People tend to, maybe not, it's not so much not being aware of it, people tend to gloss over that, don't they? And in fact, they've been on Top of the Pops before.
Yeah, it'd been played for a long time.
Yeah, it is quite amazing. It's kind of flights down to London from Manchester or Glasgow, and then helicopters back to do a concert in the night. It is quite hectic, really.
I guess you would write a Radio 1 bulletin very differently to the ones that you'd have been responsible for at other radio stations. It was all about pace, I guess, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was about clarity. That was the most important thing. And it was about explaining sometimes very complex stories in as simple a way as possible, but without, you know, without dumbing down, without using cliches, without just writing it clearly and simply.
Radio 1.
Speculations continuing about the health of the Soviet leader Yuri Andropov. He missed another important engagement today, the closing session of a meeting to plan next year's budget. He hasn't been seen in public for 4 months now. The official explanation is that he has a cold. There have been anti-Soviet demonstrations in several countries to mark the fourth anniversary of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. At home, the Foreign Secretary, Sir Geoffrey Howe, said the Russians were waging a brutal war against the Afghan people, and he urged them to withdraw. Football, it's been a traditionally busy day with most of the Football League in action. With a roundup of the main news, Brian Pitts.
We would always have people who would come on attachment to us, as the BBC phrase goes, from other departments, from the BBC newsroom or correspondents who come and work with us. And they were always initially wary, I think, of coming to Newsbeat because they, you know, they thought it was a bit beneath them or a bit, you know, a bit rubbishy. But actually, you could see that after the first couple of days, they kind of got it. And almost all of them really ended up enjoying it.
The government of Kuwait has sent a message of thanks to the Iranians for storming the hijacked Kuwaiti airliner at Tehran Airport last night. Iranian security guards moved in, overpowered the four Arab gunmen, and freed the remaining nine hostages. Among them was the British pilot, Captain Harry Clark. The flight engineer, Neil Beeston, said afterwards that the Iranians' move took everyone by surprise.
Yeah, and it wasn't about speed as well, either, I think.
Yeah, because the two are very different, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And I think that, in fact, both Frank Partridge and I were kind of about the same speed as Radio 2 and Radio 4 news readers. Later on, people got a bit faster, I think, as the DJs got faster as well. But yeah, it was about pace and emphasis more than anything else, but principally just about choosing the right stories and keeping it simple.
And it wasn't always light-hearted. You covered a lot of heavy stuff, particularly in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the 80s were an extraordinary time for news because obviously had the IRA campaigns, which continued throughout the 80s. And one of the biggest stories we probably did, or certainly that I can remember working on, was the bomb attack on the Brighton Hotel during the Tory Party conference. And that was an extraordinary story we had.
You hear about these atrocities, these bombs. You don't expect them to happen to you. But life must go on, as usual.
And your conference will go on.
Conference will go on. Conference, all right, John, the conference will go on, as usual.
Yes, I mean, the miner strike, which was a...
Cold War.
The miner strike, and indeed, the Cold War, and leading up to towards the end of the Soviet Union, towards the end of that decade.
In the newsroom, Ian Parkinson.
The Americans have offered to help the Russians after the major nuclear accident in the Ukraine. It happened at the Chernobyl power station north of the city of Kiev. The Soviet authorities have admitted that the accident, thought to be the most serious in the history of nuclear power, caused some casualties.
The phone went in the Newsbeat office one day, and in fact, I think it may not even have been me that answered the phone, it was someone else. But it was the production team who were putting together this film called Threads. They'd kind of done all the filming, and they're putting together the soundtrack, and what they wanted was a kind of a background, a sort of motif throughout the film of news bulletins and public service announcements, and just a kind of soundtrack in the background all the time. And if you watch the film, the news is always on. It's either on the TV, or it's in the radio, or it's in the car. And they said, we just need a sort of Radio 1 sounding newsreader to come along and given that I was there, I said, yeah, I'll come and do it. And then it came out probably about a year later, and it had an extraordinary impact.
Oh, yeah.
There was an American film called The Day After, which had broadcast just before that and had been hugely controversial. A similar theme that, you know, a nuclear missile drops on a big city and society falls apart. The Threads refer to the threads that hold society together, and by the end of the film, without wishing to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a great film. But by the end of the film, you know, essentially society has fallen apart as a result. But yes, whenever two things actually. One, it paid for a couple of holidays because although the initial fee wasn't great,
TV was great
because they then sold it on VHS and they sold it to countries all around the world. And for years, I would get a check for 10 quid from Guam or something.
This is why he's got a nice watch on.
Yeah, I thought this is great. The easiest half hour's work I ever did. But so many people, if that subject ever comes up, say, I watched that film when I was a kid and I didn't sleep for 6 months afterwards. It's an extraordinary film, absolutely terrifying.
The time has now come to make everything ready for you and your family in case an air attack happens.
When you hear the attack warning, you and your family must take cover at once.
Ian, for anybody who doesn't know, you went off and had an incredible career that went on for many years at Radio 1. I mean, obviously, you went away for a while. I think Five Live, wasn't it? And then you came back. And not only editor of Newsbeat, and also editor of specialist programming at Radio 1. I mean, I bet all those years ago when you started, you could never have imagined that you'd be up on that lofty perch.
I never thought I'd make an editor. I'm a hack reporter. Yeah, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go out and be a reporter and present news programs. But principally, I just wanted to be a news reporter, and I loved it and I enjoyed it. And I did it for about 15 years.
This lunchtime, Europe reaches an agreement on a weapons policy and why we're all being urged to become Ellie lovers. Ian Parkinson reporting.
Then NATO leaders at Brussels start having a family and realising that you probably need to settle down. And I got a staff job as a producer at the BBC and then, went off to start Five Live in 1994, and which was a very exciting time.
Good morning. Welcome to a new network, Radio 5 Live, news and sport from the BBC, 24 hours a day.
And then the then editor of Newsbeat. Well, first of all, I became assistant editor at Newsbeat and then eventually the editor at Newsbeat, which was brilliant. And it was an exciting time to be editor because it was a period in which, well, new technology was coming in, digital technology was coming in, and we were very much early adopters of that at Newsbeat. But also there was a lot more integration with the network, with Radio 1, much less sort of separation between the news and the DJs. It became much more of an integrated whole. And then after sort of 20 years in daily news, I thought I wanted a break, and I actually got a job elsewhere in the BBC, and I went to see Matthew Bannister, who was then controller of Radio 1 and going through quite a torrid time, or had sort of just emerging from the most lively part of his reorganisation at Radio 1. I just went to see him as a sort of courtesy to say that I was leaving as editor of Newsbeat, and also because he was an old colleague of mine. And he said, oh, don't do that. I actually need someone to come and work at the network. So, yeah, in 1997, I suddenly ended up in show business, which was great. And essentially running the started off as managing editor, but running the specialist music programs and the commissioning the documentaries and things, which was brilliant. And working with people like Pete Tong and Tim Westwood and Trevor Nelson, and then starting up a few years later, actually starting up Radio 1 Extra was an extraordinary experience.
Oh my God, we're here! I'm going to say, welcome to 1 Extra, the new black music from the BBC.
It was a very, very different world to having been in news for 15, 20 years, and then suddenly finding yourself at some big Radio 1 event. I remember in my first, this is probably going outside your remit really, but I remember in my first few months as managing editor, first of all, I was sent off in charge of the Radio 1 roadshow at the World Cup in France, which was extraordinary. Just driving around France for a month.
It's a little bit different to Margate, isn't it?
It was very, very different. And then I ended up in charge of the outside broadcast from Ibiza in August.
Well, by all accounts, Ibiza this year is 30% up in terms of bookings on last year, which itself was the busiest year on record. There are simply no beds anywhere to be found for those of you wanting to go for a late booking, and the flights are absolutely shocker too. We're coming at you live from Cafe Mambo. We're with a massive throng in full attendance. We've spread ourselves far and wide over the island. And if you're unaware, pretty much all the shows come live from Ibiza right over the weekend on 97 to 99 FM Radio 1. And for now, you're with me, Judge Jules. 9 through 11 in the UK, 10 through 12 Spanish Central European time.
And this was probably about 6 months after I'd left News, and I found myself on a yacht in the Mediterranean with Judge Jules passing round the champagne. And I thought, yeah, this... This is my reward for all those days standing in the rain outside some union meeting. Show business is very different.
I don't think we can top that. I think that's a great way to end. Ian Parkinson, thank you very much for coming in and sharing your Radio 1 with me.
It's a pleasure.